Hello, and welcome to another Mondays on Tuesday on a Wednesday, one of those discombobulated weeks. So I made a promise last official episode. I got excited on a Friday and recorded a bonus one. It's a good thing because that bonus one clarified really a lot about the Seneca system's mission and finally consistent messaging. But two podcasts ago, what would have been on the Tuesday before this episode, which should have been recorded yesterday, I said I was hoping to have the templater working. And I'm recording a day late. I record an episode in the middle, but the templater works. Oh my God, it's such a relief. I struggled with this thing so much. The first time I wrote the templater was probably about 4 or 5 months ago. And I got to a place where I really, really wanted it to do nested stuff. And what that means is, like, when you see menus that are indented, that's usually not an easy thing to write. And I really wanted to have that capability, and I got to the initial template stuff working. And when I say template, I'm not talking about, like, if you're a programmer, the C++ template class thing. I'm talking about, like, the template of a web server that actually forms the basic fundamentals of a programming language, which is not super easy to explain how, but it does build those building blocks. So, in addition to the fact that template works, and that is awesome, and I am so tired of having bad news on this podcast that it's really refreshing to have good news. But also, it was a very interesting process because most of the components that I have a lot of faith in are like 6th to 12th generation, meaning they've been like written and rewritten and rewritten. And not 100% of them is deleted, but at times 100% of them is deleted. Like there's a few entire files that I removed. And about 2 days ago, I got to a place where it was almost working. I thought it was going to work with a, in hindsight, somewhat naive approach. And I pushed it almost all the way to working, and that last like 5% just would not fit. It was a real square peg in a round hole kind of moment. And so yesterday I was like, you know what? I don't really want to rebuild this because I'm behind on everything. I really need to get the message out. The documentation is waiting on this component to have something to show. I was like, you know what? I have to stop working because I'm getting tired of making mistakes. And I was like, tomorrow I'll just read it. And I got to thinking and I was like, well, it's time to nuke this bad boy. And so I did. I ripped out most of it and rewrote it from the learnings of the first time. And oh my God, is it brilliant! It now has like eight sort of action paths that it can take, and each action path can have like a queue of items within each action path. So like, if you have a lot of closing stuff, it can assemble a queue across the closing tag, and if you have a whole bunch of next stuff, it can assemble across the next tag, which eventually will consolidate one of the elements that I had built in this process. So, super exciting. And that bonus episode that I recorded on a Friday about basically the mission of the Seneca system, that clarified its I'll pull up exactly which one that was. That clarified the whole thing that I've been doing this whole time. And you know, it's cool that it's a glass bottom boat and you can see what you're doing. And yeah, cool. But what I realize I'm really after here is essentially like high level assembly. And that's why that last episode 12, Don't Return My Calls, it's all about getting out from under this multi-argument single return pattern, which honestly, if you look really deeply at assembly and the basics of a computer processor, it's a really odd sort of metaphorical leap into that multi-argument single return, and it kind of hides a lot of the power of computing and composition. So I'm super happy, and especially because the templater is an example of that. But the subject of today is actually Seriously Human, which is the employment framework that I have talked frighteningly little about. And so while I started this podcast saying I wasn't going to talk about Compare Basic and the like more entertaining parts, I hope it's entertaining, but I'm going to talk about the employment framework of Compare Basic. Seriously Human was born of the idea that I kicked around a few ideas of how I wanted to structure the sort of company personnel employment model. And a friend of mine who also is one of the very earliest crowdfunders, he said, wow, sounds like you're taking humans seriously. Things like work-life balance, mostly consistent pay, and like how reviews are done, and the process of how to solve problems at work, both personal and like business technical problems. And the name stuck. I was like, oh wow, Seriously Human. That's a great name. So there's a bunch. I have a bunch of different ideas, and I hope I can succinctly introduce this idea. But basically, it is a kind of a mishmash of a worker collective and a corporation. And that sounds like a match made in hell. That sounds like, shared responsibility or dictatorial executives are on like the opposite ends of the earth. But there's a phrase I kind of live by, somewhat as a middle child and somewhat just as a human, which is, those who walk down the middle of the road get hit from both sides. So true to form in that, Seriously Human is not just the only sort of hybrid paradox. The other hybrid paradox of the company is that it is both a for-profit and open source sort of free software company at the same time. Another contradiction, which I'll go into at the very end because I think it'll make more sense. So Seriously Human as a hybrid corporation worker collective, one of the main questions I have gotten a lot about my approach to this company is, why in the world did you open a C corporation? I've been talked out of the C corporation so many times. I have had an accountant and a financial advisor both tell me, close this thing and open an LLC. It will save you time. It will save you headaches. And I have said, okay, but I'm trying to actually make an example of a better business for the business world. And the intention is to have several thousand employees. So may as well get off on the wrong foot. And if anyone thinks that it is easy to change the fundamental structure of your business when there is more money on the table and more voices in the room, that is just bonkers. So why have people told me that this, LLC model is better than the C-Corp? And for those of you not familiar, a limited liability corporation is kind of like the new kid on the block in terms of the last 20 years. It has a very different tax structure. One of the benefits is the membership in a LLC can fall directly back onto your personal income as a member. So if you have a loss, it becomes a loss on your income. If you have a benefit, it's taxed under your, regular income. Most solopreneurs go with the LLC because the corporation is double taxed in the sense that income for employees is taxed, and then whatever's left over within the company is taxed. And then traditionally the rest of it goes out to shareholders as dividends. And for a small operation, this is not that good, big of a deal, or not that good of a deal, because double taxation, is so bad. But I have loved the idea of a board of directors structure. And what I particularly like, though, is the idea of more or less creating a mini democracy with shares. And that's maddeningly hard to do with an LLC. The member agreement, you have to kind of like draft your own, whatever. And when I say like a mini democracy with shares, what's the most interesting part to me is that I've been part of a number of companies where shares are offered and they vest over a period of time to increase loyalty. And then in addition to that, once they do vest, they're not even like real common interesting shares. You don't have real voting rights. You don't have any decisions. Like nothing happens with these shares other than, if it's a public company, the ability to like sell them on the public market one day, which, money kind of good, but, purpose and decisions much better. And so the model that I am kicking around, and the reason I say kicking around, is because a number of these things in Seriously Human will affect the business in a serious way, and also will affect the compensation, which is paid out in dividends. I have actually written a set of bylaws already for the existing crowdfunders that will require their approval to adopt these into the bylaws. So everything you hear right now that I'm talking about is actually more or less a proposal for me, because I will actually need to sell this to my own crowdfunders to make it happen. And as crazy as that sounds, I actually like it that way, because I'm intending to make a structure of employment that must be good for lots of people, not just my bias. And if I can't explain it to people, and I hope I get people's input to change it as well, then it won't withstand the test of time anyway. So Seriously Human, in addition to granting employees voting stock that lets them actually make decisions about the company, it starts with a few interesting premises. The first premise is that in order to make sure that nobody gets left behind in terms of income, and salary negotiations aren't super awkward or leave a certain minority or a certain gender in the dust, intentionally or accidentally, everyone is based on a base salary and then an increment on that salary. So for example, if you are in the interview process and we like you, but we don't know where to put you, you join on the base salary. Let's say the base salary is like $70,000. So, well, no, I'm going to, well, I probably shouldn't talk about numbers because I'm not that good at them on the fly, but more or less, the base salary is whatever the standard employee would make in the beginning. And then as seniority increases, you become an increment on that. So if you are a senior engineer, you may be paid 120% of the base salary. And then if you're a lead engineer, maybe you're paid 140% of that. And then if you are running multiple teams, maybe it goes up to 160% of that. And the board of directors would be similar. And so everybody's basically on this ladder. And the ladder has two components. It has the base and the increment. So if the increment is 5%, then 1.1 is 105%. If the increment is 7%, then that pay scale is 107% for 1.1, 114% for 1.2. The reason this is important is because if there were to be an economic event or just simply drift over time, it becomes possible to raise the salaries of the entire company at once, because everyone's based on the same base salary. And so if inflation goes nuts, everybody can raise with the price of inflation. And the idea is that raises are not given directly for tiny little things. You end up being like an employee 1.3 to an employee 1.4. And that comes with both the title and like a position on this ladder. And each position in the ladder comes with that amount of shares of stock. So the base employee has maybe one share, and every increment after that is another share. Now, if you're thinking that one share doesn't sound like a lot, you're not wrong about that. However, there's already something in the bylaws that's I refer to as the super vote. And the super vote is where buckets of shares vote individually. So, for example, right now, to control the budget, which is basically like how much I spend on servers and how much I pay myself in salary as a maximum, it requires a super vote of the crowdfunders and me in a unison vote. And that basically becomes one-to-one, meaning I right now am theoretically owed 7,000 shares, but there's only 8,400 to 8,600 shares in the whole company. But the reason that 1,400 to 1,600 shares has voting power is because the bylaws specify that they as a group, the crowdfunders, equals 1 point in certain cases, and I equal 1 point. And there are things we have to agree on. It requires a vote from both to do things. So even if the employees are like a total of 20 shares to my 7,000 and the crowdfunders, you know, 1,600, there are certain clauses that will mean that it is a majority of three And if the crowdfunders and the employees want to do something that I don't, I'm shit out of luck. And vice versa. And so the type of things that I am hoping we end up writing in the bylaws to vote is, what do we build next? What do we allocate as bonus and dividends versus do we spin up another team? Do we chase another market? Is this something that's interesting for the group to pursue, or do we all just want the cash? And in addition to that, I expect there to be a chapter I call Chapter E for employment, where certain things are regulated, such as project management philosophy may or may not be a Chapter E thing, or it may actually be an individual team thing. And so individual teams who work autonomously can break down into a vote that only involves the shares of people who belong to their team. And if you are the team lead, you may have 4 shares to each senior engineer on the team that may have 2 shares. But if there's 3 of them, that is 6 shares to your 4 shares. So the reason I say it's a hybrid situation is because you can see it's kind of democratic, kind of not, kind of profit to shareholders, not to workers. But then there's a relationship between the dividend payments and the bonus allocation. So the idea is I'm hoping that we can tie them together so that the employee bonus is actually rewarding employees on a similar threshold of what's going to investors in dividends. Now, this may sound confusing if you're following conventional Wall Street, because a lot of Wall Street profits are not dividends paid from the company. It's actually just the increasing valuation from the retained earnings schedule of the accounting model most times. And those shares are being passed around like horse betting. So that whole world gets insane, and maybe we'll touch it someday, but not today. But the idea is to use the corporation structure of voting shares having decision power, where everyone, every employee is somewhat of an owner with common shares. The bylaws create a structure of buckets where these groups have somewhat equivalent power in different situations. And then the idea is also to weight that power within teams by allocating different amounts of shares based on where you are in the salary ladder. So there's a fantastic documentary that I saw that I don't remember the name of, but I will find it and link it in the comments. And it was about a brewery. It was about a number of things, kind of like, I think it's kind of like a transient hotel where people can like live and work at the hotel at the same time, and kind of like just new way of imagining work and living. And then also a brewery. I think it's in America, but it's called something British, like the London Brewery, or I'm sorry, but that might not be the right name, but I will find it. And the video is really interesting because they talk about how wonderful it is to be a worker collective, but then also how annoying it can be to need consensus all the time. And that balance is very hard to do, very real, and that's why Seriously Human is still somewhat of a proposal. There's one other factor to Seriously Human that I find the most interesting and possibly the most controversial, but I also think the most valuable. I think this next concept could quite literally make or break whether or not I can drive this thing up to a few thousand employees. And it's the idea of secession. Yeah, you heard that right. I said secession. And I mean that as an alternative to layoffs. So here's the deal. This is a crazy concept. I've talked about it with a few people, positive responses, but here's the idea. In the event that a business unit is in fact not performing, which given modern business culture may or may not even be the case in layoffs, in the event that a business unit is truly somehow not performing in a way that we as Compare Basic would want, they are given the option to leave as a unit and join another company or start their own company. So this isn't kind of like, people get upset, they all run across the street handshake, goodbye kind of situation. It's more like in the event that there's some consensus somewhere, and again, I don't really know exactly how that works. I don't know if it's the director shares, which my shares are likely to cannibalize into the employee shares, but then also, the director shares where there'll be a director of different disciplines, which would kind of satisfy the C-level, but I hope we never have a C-level because I don't really know why they're called chiefs anyway. Is the employee class the tribe, right? Are these chiefs of the tribe? Anyway, it's a very strange idea that you have a board of directors and then chiefs, and that's all weird. So the idea would be that there is a director share class and then an employee share class and then a crowdfunding share class. And the crowdfunding share classes are something that you buy, but the director and the employee share classes are something that you earn. It's possible that the directors will go up for a vote from the employees and the crowdfunders at some point. I'm not sure. But the idea would be that the directors and possibly the employees and possibly shareholders could nominate a team for release, and then it would be proposed to them that if you guys want to walk, you totally can. Now, the only way this works is if the intellectual property of that business unit is somehow tied to that business unit, and they would actually be walking with their own code base and their own trademarks. And this only works because the model of the company is hybrid, closed source, open source. And that means that what that business unit is doing, if it's not open source and they could quite literally leave and go use it at their next company anyway, because it's right now it's under a Berkeley system design license, the BSD 3 clause license, but that might move to something more simplistic like some of the common use case art licenses, because I was reading a few of them and they seem really interesting. But so this idea where a team decides that they would like to leave and they have been given permission to leave would basically just mean that they become an external team. And if they would like to contract some of the administrative services as they basically rehire CompareBasic as a consulting service, totally welcome to. Maybe other companies would like to hire CompareBasic as a consulting service, so that's not a bad pipeline to get used to anyway. And so this idea is, how do we think about serving humans internally and externally? Right? Like, what's the difference from someone being under our umbrella or paying us a fee for our time and being outside of us, or saying, we don't need you, we'll go it alone? This gets particularly interesting when you consider that if someone were to run a business plan by the sort of core CompareBasic as an organization, and we like it, they like us, what if they came with their own funding? Like, what if someone comes up with a business plan of something you can do with Seneca and says, well, I was going to do this anyway, but you seem to have a great administrative staff, payroll set up, a tax infrastructure set up, shares infrastructure set up. We would like to use those things and build this product on top of the Seneca platform with the help and guidance of your team and the advice of people who've been using this kind of thing. By the way, we have a business plan. And we have a funding source. So the idea there is that someone else would bankroll their salary and they would automatically be granted right to succession if they wanted it. So because they came to us with their own money but wanted to live within our organization, they were automatically granted the ability to walk away. Now, this is more than a little bit of an outlandish concept, but the idea is this. Everyone knows someone in some niche industry that knows something they can't figure out how to build. And so if CompareBasic can create a supportive and exciting model for people connecting the dots between the weird niche industry connections they have and the Seneca system and the expertise within CompareBasic that knows the Seneca system, and then function within our employment structure and spin up funding, I think that's a win for everybody. And I think this is the way that compare basic gets to thousands of employees and provides jobs for the industry. And that's one of the reasons I've been working so tirelessly to make Seneca so impenetrable and awesome, is because I would love for that kind of excitement to be there, where people say, oh, I know these people in some strange industry. Like, there are, you know, there are manufacturing things that can't find tools. There are, you know, automotive companies that can't find tools. And look, I am not going to be the person to walk into all of these industries and propose an idea. It's not going to happen. So the idea is to provide Seriously Human as a voting, employment, and company governance framework that is both exciting to work for, is balanced and fair, but also provides a framework for entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial-minded people to literally snap together their ideas with our technology and, you know, spin up a team of six in some internal compare basic or slightly external compare basic or fully external contracting us as a service, and just like, let's go, let's solve problems, let's get out there, let's connect the pieces. So these are the kinds of things I'm proposing with Seriously Human. And I'm gonna go back to something I mentioned a little bit earlier, which is employees' ability to modify Chapter E of the bylaws. And it's things like, I think there's going to be something, or at least I hope so, because again, I have to propose all this stuff. I think there's going to be something in Chapter E that basically says, like, you can't make a law, a bylaw that legislates things like, you know, work from home or work for the office or work on a certain schedule. That kind of thing is up to the team. Now, if you're on a team with people who have more shares than you and all want to go to the office, then they may write a localized bylaw for their specific team that says, you know, we're in the office 3 days a week or whatever. But I think that those kinds of very, very local decisions likely can be somewhat mandated as, like, you know, core corporate's not allowed to mess with this. But then also, you know, teams can figure out consistency patterns that work for them. If somebody wants to do agile, I strongly advise that they don't, they can. You know, if the team wants it, they can. If someone wants to do Kanban, which is basically just agile light, they can. But I have a proposal for something different. And this doesn't have to be core to everyone, but I think that everything can kind of operate somewhat within this. And the framework is called Objective Attachment Fixture. And the idea is that you specify the objective, like, what is this doing? Like, in the context of email to site, which may change names because it's more or less targeted as a podcasting and sort of media publication platform, the objective is make a platform where people can record and publish podcasts, right? That's the objective. Blogging is cool. Independent media is cool. Maybe there's some other features, some primary, some secondary, but the objective is podcasting platform. The attachment would be, it has to be something that people can use smoothly and creatively rather than quickly. Meaning it's not really aimed entirely at novice users. It's a little bit more on the power user side, on the, we would like people to be able to, you know, record live sessions where people are not in the same room. Like, that's a mandatory thing. But then the fixtures, so it's object attachment fixtures. Fixtures are, these are stuff that you may think we're attached to, but we're really not, right? Like, the original, you know, maybe there was a little bit of work done before this that was all done in the browser. We're not married to the browser. You want to make it a desktop application? Go for it. And so the idea is to say what the objective is, what we are attached to that you might not think we are, and what you might think we're fixated on that we're actually not. And I think this three-tiered approach does a really good job of clarifying what people should treat as sacred, what people should not treat as sacred, and then have at it. And the reason this differentiates from, like, the sort of why and how stories that I've seen in a lot of companies, or just kind of loosey-goosey bark orders, which also doesn't work, is the idea that it intends that you're giving even an internal team almost like a contractor's statement of work. Because one of the things that I have observed about companies is they oftentimes treat contractors as if they deserve an explanation and employees as if they don't. It's almost as if there's this attitude for internal staff that, like, they're going to be here forever. They sign their life away. They can wait. And I would love to have some very clear communication for that. And then there's another model within this, which is creator, implementer, and publisher. Creator, implementer, and publisher is the idea that the publisher is involved in creating the OAF document objective attachment fixtures. But then they're basically out of the loop. Like the team is going to more or less go off in a dark room and build some stuff and come back like a month later. And so the publisher is the person who is available for advice, but is not allowed to check up on progress. That's not allowed. And the reason is that I heard this story, and it's a true story, and it's a really upsetting story, which is there was a team that was given 5 weeks to build something. They spent 3 weeks building the completely wrong thing and realized their mistake, deleted the whole thing, and then finished the entire project from scratch in 2 weeks. The next time this company had something to do that was similar, they only gave them 2 weeks. And if you build software, you know how ridiculous that is, because basically they spent 2 weeks running into a dead end while learning everything they needed to know to build it correctly. So the system wasn't built in 2 weeks, it was built in five. And that's one of the things that I see with a publisher being involved intimately in the process is that, especially when it comes to software, the roads are windy, and if you are nervous about that, you're just going to cause dishonesty or panic or both. And so the idea of the publisher is kind of like define it, let it go, it'll come back to you, be available for advice, but you don't get to initiate the request for progress. And then the implementer is a support person or a support role for the creator. So the creator is kind of like, what you would call the principal engineer, I guess, or like the architect, whatever. And the creator is the one who says, this is what we're doing, here's how we do this. And then the implementer is basically, I would like to, fill in the gaps. Maybe you can send me a problem, or maybe I can, advise or help out on this. And what's interesting is that these roles don't have to be individual. You can have multiple creators if they have a good dynamic. You can have multiple publishers. You can have publishers that are also creators, and you can have creators that are also implementers. Now, if you think that I am the kindest, most benevolent person for saying that publishers should give people wide latitude to build things and creators have all this freedom, I'm guessing you don't think I'm the kindest, most benevolent person anyway. But the way this is intended to be enforced is that people are given creator roles as kind of like a trial. And if they come back in a month and things haven't gone well, the next project around, they're an implementer. And there is no greater punishment you can give a creative human than making them build other people's stuff. I mean, that is brutal. And if they know that's on the line, if they know that this is their chance to shine and go wild and do an amazing job, I fully believe they will. And I think that the role of, Compare Basic as a group is going to be more of making sure people don't go crazy because they're so engaged in the process rather than trying desperately to hold people back and fit them into a particular path. And I say that actually with a lot of concern because I know that having free lateral ability to manage my time and process and things like that, I've actually gotten a lot of trouble. I've burnt out a lot of times. I've gotten really upset. I've built things in the wrong direction. I mean, it actually is a really challenging task to set people free and make sure that they actually learn how to fly. That's actually not an easy task. And it is something I really want to take on, because I think that, you know, targeted creativity is a really interesting thing. And so the only thing left to fill in is the idea of how all of this works within the proprietary open source hybrid model. And I like to come back to the restaurant idea. Restaurants are not cooking food with ingredients that you flat out cannot get. They are providing a service for something that you do not want to do, that you may not have the skills to cook as well as the chefs, but you probably don't have the 48 hours that they spend preparing the sort of pre-prepared components that go into the 20-minute meals that you have that are really just being assembled in 20 minutes. But, you know, they've been roasting things and smoking things and making sauces, and you're not paying them for the ingredients, you're paying them for the service. And that's the model of Compare Basic, which is the system itself is open source, free for anyone to use. When we assemble that into a podcasting blog engine, when we assemble that into data visualization software, when we assemble that into accounting software, when we assemble that into a governance algorithmic analysis tool, you are paying us for the service of providing a user experience to you. And so what that basically means is that the open source team, which is working on core components that are then used by product teams to assemble products, the open source team has much more of a research and development focus that doesn't really have the same kind of deadline requirements. And the product team shouldn't have the type of volatility of software development that the open source tools team has, because the product teams should be assembling already functioning components. And so that idea of the open closed source separation and the separation of R&D and product work fits both into the idea I said before about secession, in terms of when people walk with their own code bases, that would only be people walking with the product code bases, because the tools team is the open source code base. And I know it sounds kind of crazy to say, oh, I'm launching a company where people can walk away, but I truly believe that, you know, work is the best when it is in fact voluntary and when people are excited to participate. And I think that companies are run the best when there are a lot of voices in the room, when the people actually doing work have a say in things. So I hope that lays out the sort of elements of Seriously Human. I'm really just trying to get to a place where human power and ego and selfishness is limited. You know, there are some checks there. People are given the freedom to be really passionate about what they're doing, but also seriously want to perform well. Partly because there are real consequences to sort of losing that, you know, direction, but also because I hope to create a company where people are just around to help each other out. You know, you're having a personal problem, hard time managing your schedule, productivity is dipping for any reason. You know, I had to become extremely suicidal and go get myself hospitalized before I was able to really figure myself out, because, to be frank, no one at work gave a fuck. It's like any of my performance or personal problems, there were very, very few people that ever was like, why are you late to work every day? Why are you behind on projects all the time? You know, those are the questions that just don't really get asked. And so I kind of feel like building a employment framework where voting has real power in the bylaws, and the idea of people just going off and doing a bunch of work and coming back is the premise. And then when it doesn't work, we all got to figure out why. I think these things will encourage behavioral problems to actually be solved. And I think that business and life are so intimately related that we all bring our trauma to work. We all hash it out at work. And so it's just kind of another element of experiencing the magic of life. And so I'm trying to make a a framework that sort of, you know, limits and curbs what would otherwise be damaging, power hungry, or just methods that lack experimentation, while at the same time focusing them into the kind of consistency that can generate consistent value for customers, that can actually, you know, bring back salary for everybody. Because I do actually want, you know, customers to value the work and not just have it be, you know, off in some random direction all the time. So yeah, that's I don't know. I laid out all kinds of stuff here, but I actually think that this idea of hybrid worker collective corporation has really a lot of legs. And as an aside, I got on this chat on, it's like a Discord server for, like, you know, anti-money, tear down corporations, let's all live in Star Trek kind of thing. And I had a really interesting debate with the host of this Discord, and I was basically saying, you know, companies can be run well, here's why. And they were basically saying, you know, money is evil, it's the worst invention, here's why. And we were able to find enough common ground to end the conversation by talking about our favorite Orville episodes. And so, you know, there's something for everyone here. I think money is a tool. I don't think that money is evil, but I also don't think it's been used particularly well as of late. And I would like to see us thrive as a, you know, American economy and then world economy. And I think reimagining how businesses can incorporate the sort of creativity and enthusiasm of people while providing frameworks that, you know, can protect and limit some of the sort of worse carnal, horrible behaviors that, you know, all humans have in them. I think it's important, and I hope that some of these ideas stick and Seriously Human can be, you know, kicked around and voted into the bylaws of Compare Basic to form an example. And, you know, as we get it wrong, hopefully we can, you know, put to a vote what the adjustments are and move on from there. And wow, this was long. Well, hey, you know what? If you've been listening for 42 minutes, then thank you so much, and I'll see you next week.